Good afternoon, everyone.
Vietnam.
We don't want to go there.
No.
I mean, although it feels a bit like Vietnam outside today.
Could go there.
Welcome to Open Source of Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and the other voice is...
Scotty Hertz, fairly sure I've completely recovered from Hillside, although... The arc is longer every year. Oh, I seem to have a Hillside shirt on. I just realized that. So, I want the dream to continue, man.
The arc is long indeed.
A lark to Hillside.
Especially when you're wearing the Hillside 08 shirt.
Correct. Retro, man.
11 years
old. Style,
I mean,
man.
Those shirts hold up. Anyway.
This one's a good one.
Open Source is a CFRU's political current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And sometimes we interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be Ward 6 Councillor Mark McKinnon. That will be at the bottom of the hour. And before the break, we'll talk about the latest debate over free speech, which has a very local connection. If you've been following the local news recently. But first, we are going to look at the overall election picture with a little over 3 months to go. It seems like it's going to be a very tight race between the Liberals and the Conservatives. But it was kind of like the Green Party that was making some unusual news this week by hiring a very... Well, I mean, if you travel in political circles, a well-known establishment voice in the form of Warren Kinsella, which actually came up during Elizabeth May's town hall here on Monday.
Yeah, I was watching your feed, as you probably know, tuned into it for a bit, right? And somebody from the audience, assuming it was one, I'm going to assume it's a Green person, asked.
It was a candidate from Hamilton, I think.
So totally somebody inside the house asked a question. Yeah. So what about Warren Kinsella? And tell us, what did Elizabeth May
say? It's coming
say?
From inside the house.
Yes.
no, somebody asked her, the candidate, which is a younger woman, probably like maybe a grad student. I mean, that's profiling, but whatever. But she was on the younger side, but she says, like, what, you know, people on, she's been talking to people who've asked her about Warren Kinsella, the so-called master of the dark arts. His branding, not anyone else's.
Yeah, the Prince of Darkness? Or he seems to go by that.
And Elizabeth May said that he is not playing like a major role. He's not a strategist. He's not a campaign manager. He doesn't have like really, it doesn't sound like he has like really official title. His job is, according to Elizabeth May, very focused on repelling attacks made on the party and on the leader, which would be her.
That's not a minor job. I don't care what Elizabeth May says. That's big time.
Yeah.
And they've got one of the biggest hired guns in the country on the topic.
And also who's worked for everyone.
Yes, but mainly Liberals, right?
Mainly Liberals. I mean, he was like in the tank for Kretchen.
Bit of a backgrounder, yeah, if you're still wondering who the heck this guy is. Kretchen, as a young man, early 90s, Kinsella hit a stride, I guess, with the Kretchen Liberals, an advisor to them. He was also an advisor to Dalton McGuinty.
Yep.
Remember Dalton McGuinty when he first sort of came on the scene back in the day? But probably his most famous moment that you might remember if you've been following politics for, I don't know, at least 20 years like we have, was the Barney the Dinosaur moment with Stockwell Day.
Right.
Where Stockwell Day was talking about the, I guess his beliefs, which he's entitled to, about how old the Earth was. And then Warren Kinsella went on, it may have even been The National or something with a, with a stuffed Barney the Dinosaur, say, see, this is what he believes. So he's definitely a go-for-the-juggler kind of guy, has a lot of experience, and is probably exactly the person that you want for the job if you want to win. Now, Elizabeth May also kind of says she doesn't like the terminology war room, although every party, whether like it or not, has the equivalent of a war room. What did she call it? The peace room? The strategy room, maybe, or the Zen room or something. Whatever it is, if Kinsella's in it...
Peace room sounds on brand for Elizabeth May.
It's really like, you could call it the pit bull room because that's, that's where this guy... Politics is a blood sport. We know this, especially with election time. We got, 100 days, 99 days? How far are we?
Just over 3 months. So
3 months.
About 100 days.
October 21st is the presumed day. You have to get
that's election day. We don't know when
there was a possibility it might not be though, right?
Well,
we haven't gone there yet.
I can't imagine them moving it because The week after that, I believe, is, or the week before that is Thanksgiving. The week after that, I think there's municipal elections in one of the territories.
But isn't it a high holiday? In Judaism?
Yeah, but
wasn't that the reason why they were going to possibly move it?
We just discovered that, though.
Well,
that's the odd part of this is that, you know, if somebody said election day is going to be on December 25th, would it be really like 3 months before that where somebody goes, wait a minute, that's Christmas.
You should hold it on Christmas. It's the quietest day. No one would have an excuse.
Right. And yeah,
making a turkey. I couldn't vote.
Everyone would be able to get out and vote. That's interesting.
But that's, we can pick our days later, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, despite the fact it's a Jewish high holiday, I have a hard time believing they're going to move the day.
Yeah, they picked it, 5 years in advance?
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, she also...
I mean, it's fixed election day, right?
Yes. Elizabeth May also said something to the effect of, well, if you want to go after hackers, you hire a hacker?
Ugh.
Yeah. You didn't like that one, did you?
No.
As a fan of the movie Hackers, I did not appreciate... No,
I don't know. Just as a fan of... because a lot of the... I don't think anyone...
Somebody told her to say that, possibly Warren Kinsella.
Probably.
You know what you should say, Elizabeth? I don't know how he talks.
But
I've heard him speak.
The thing I think a lot of people are gonna struggle with, and a lot of them are probably going to be Green Party supporters, is the long-time branding exercise that we're the Green Party and we're going to do politics differently. And Warren Kinsella doesn't do politics differently. Warren Kinsella is like the very edge of politics as usual. So it's just off brand. It's off message. And I understand that people are going to come. I mean, people are already going after May. Like, people came onto my feed when I had the town hall, like calling her drunky and like talking about how she's a liberal in disguise. And, you know,
the local trolls or just the international
trolls?
Well,
local trolls, yeah. For sure. But I mean, that's
go trolls. Yeah.
I mean, so like the attacks are already out. I get that. But the long-term message of the Green Party is like, we're above this. And I wonder if they're making this what they call a small move, which, as you implied, is like really not such a small move. But,
no,
you know, this kind of move to play politics as usual, if this isn't going to be similar to where Tom Mulcair screwed up and where Andrea Horvath screwed up, which is we're going to tack to the center and we're going to play politics as usual because we're this close to like having some power. We're this close to forming government, or we're this close to forming official opposition, or whatever the goal is. Like, when you're this close, it becomes a little bit...
We can taste it.
Yeah, it becomes a little bit more okay to abandon the things that got you this far. And that could blow up in her face.
It could, but he's a free agent and a hired gun, right? Oh, sorry, I'm using the violent imagery. a hired goon when he's hockey, but no. Or gangster.
He is the goon squad.
He is the goon squad, and he's coming to town. Beep, beep. I had a bit of a discussion with somebody who's green before the show. I won't mention any names. And it kind of went like this, and this was my take on it. It was like, you need... your a-hole.
Sure.
Without swearing.
Yeah.
Which is really difficult.
Yeah.
You need a person like Kinsella on the team. Every political machine that wants to do well or does do well has those people in the background. Mm-hmm. Warren Kinsella may be a bit of an exception in that
we know who he is.
We talked about this before. We used to, not anymore, we used to watch Power and Politics, and they would get the handler from each of the parties, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jamie, what's his name? Ian... You know, it's that long ago. So they sort of represent a party and their face. And most people would say, well, who's this person? It's like, but they usually work for a group like Ernst
Ian
Cliff
Capstick,
Group.
I remember
Capstick,
him, yeah.
Yes. Jamie Watt.
I just remember him.
Just took a second there, but it's been a long time.
He was our tour guide on Parliament Hill.
Was
the year
really?
I went to the CUP conference, the Canadian University Press.
Oh.
That was fun.
He seems like a nice enough guy.
Sure.
Anyway.
He's pleasant.
Nice guys finish fifth. No, that's... So...
If they're NDP, they do in Quebec.
As of late, Kinsella didn't hesitate to go after Trudeau. Mm-hmm. And considering all the years he's sort of been in the Liberal fold, I thought that in itself was interesting. Before this announcement even, it's like, okay, Kinsella's sort of associated with the Liberals, directly, mm-hmm. and yet he was chipping away at Trudeau. Trudeau should do this. Trudeau should do that. SNC-Lavalin, blah, blah, blah. Kinsella kept appearing. So now he's taking this job, and it's a job to him, and he's going to do what he does. But something else, too, should be mentioned this past week, and I think this is where he kind of differentiates from the others. He's involved in that big fight with your Ward News.
Mm-hmm.
He had it delivered to his door by via Canada Post, and both he and his wife, I think, filed a joint suit against, I don't think it was just Canada Post, but also the publisher whose name escapes
Ward.
Me. Or no, James Sears, the writer of the anti-Semitic, among other materials.
Well, I was in court this week, too.
Yes, that's the thing. That's what I mean, like, Kinsella goes from, like, just we sort of know who he is, like, he's everywhere this week. And that may change. So they've hired somebody who is a bit of a public face rather than just a totally behind-the-scenes person.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, they're going to get this. And also, the fact that he's so closely associated with the Liberals, the people that always talk about the Greens as being just sort of Liberals in disguise. What is it, Liberals with bicycles or whatever? There's that there's that slam that people use. And maybe they want to kind of deflect some of that, but I think we'll see a week or two of whatever, and then he sort of retreats behind the scenes. But we'll definitely see when the election is on what is certain people you can tell what's coming from them.
Mm.
I think we're going to see when the election's on. Like it's like, oh yeah, that's we'll be like, oh yeah, that's got to be Kinsella said to say that or to do this.
It depends how
minor
hard
role.
Anybody goes against May. Because when you look at the polls right now where you have the seat projection in the poll of polls, you have like 150 for the Conservatives against 143 for the Liberals, although the Liberals are also leading in polls. But I mean, it's very strong, like 50, like 55 say it's going to be a Conservative minority majority, and then 45 say it's going to be a Liberal minority majority. There may be like a targeting aspect to this. They're going to be looking at areas like, say, Guelph or certain areas in BC where if enough people vote for Greens, it could be an upset and split the vote. And, you know, we're not just looking for a Kinsella, but we'll also be looking at how hard the Liberals themselves might go for the Greens. Although there has been this kind of detente in the past between the two.
Yeah, we won't run against you in this riding.
But what's interesting to me is like what a non-entity the NDP has become. And I think this headline sums it up. Where did I write it down? This was from... you can find it like when you search Google News for Jagmeet Singh. It's like one of like three different articles with a similar headline to this come up in the top three.
This is just this past week?
Yeah, this is today. Singh tours Quebec in hopes of avoiding NDP wipeout. And the reason why they're saying that is that the NDP are in fifth place with 9% behind the Liberals with 33, the Conservatives with 23, the Bloc Québécois with 18.5, and the Greens with 11.
Greens and 11 in Quebec? I didn't realize that.
With... this 9% level that the NDP is at, when it was that low before, they won zero seats in Quebec.
That's
so the
oblivion.
NDP is on the cusp of, like, in two elections, going from having a majority
orange
presence
crush.
In Quebec, orange crush, to having no presence
to
in Quebec.
To orange rind. Okay, whatever.
maybe Elizabeth May should hire you for the war room.
The peace room, man. I'm... Yeah, those aren't good numbers for the NDP, but and as you've said, I think once it becomes clear that the Greens are on the rise, they seem to be,
mm-hmm.
even though we're still not in the period yet.
No.
The talk is, and Elizabeth May did it herself when she said, balance of power. You're going to hear this a lot, maybe not necessarily from us in the next 100 days. Balance of power, balance of power. If they're within that realm, then everybody is going to go for their jugular.
Yeah.
And then it is war. And that's when you need the Kinsellas and whoever else is in the back room to stand on guard. Because that's what it sounds like. He's going to be deflecting attacks?
Well, that's
the people that deflect the attacks are also ones that can create the counterattack, because you need to do that. It doesn't matter what your politics are. If you decide to do politics differently, if you're in the game, and it is a game, you got to play by the rules of the game. And that means that there will be attacks. They could be nice, gentle attacks. They could be friendly attack, like, you know, sort of sarcastic or funny attacks or whatever. It's going to happen. If you do not do that, you will not cut it. As we know in this game that we cover so closely.
Well,
that was Inside Politics with Scotty Hertz and Adam Donaldson. So yeah, we should go join the peace rooms or whatever. I need a new job anyway, so.
Well, which is it? You want to be a political operative, and you want to be on Inside Politics?
An Inside Politics political operative.
Oh boy.
So anyone listening wants to drop me a... No, never mind.
Find Scotty on LinkedIn.
You'll find me on LinkedIn. Send a pigeon. I'll probably anyway.
Yeah. No. Pigeonpost.com. So we have to talk about free speech because there is a Guelph connection to this issue this week. You may have heard that Maxime Bernier, the leader of the People's Party of Canada, was going to come to, well, actually is coming to Guelph.
To a secret location.
Dun, 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 dun. So he was supposed to talk at the Guelph Youth Music Center. There was several people, obviously, who bought tickets. Over 100 people, I think, the People's Party said. Hmm. And he was going to speak at the Guelph Youth Music Center. It was going to be like a combination of like chat between him and Mark Paralivas, the People's Party candidate, and then some audience Q&A. Local protesters of the anti-fascist variety said they were going to protest outside of the Guelph Youth Music Center, which is their right. The poster was shared on social media with other groups from Hamilton and Toronto who have also seen quite a bit of activity, clashes between anti-fascists and people who would probably identify as white supremacists in recent weeks.
Oh, they're white supremacists, yeah.
But
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the event at the GYMC was canceled, and now that yes, they are having a meeting in an undisclosed venue.
And if you happen to know where that is, give us a call on the break, and we'll confidentially. Oh, there's a smile coming from
we
Adam.
We don't know. I don't know where it is.
Somebody knows where it is.
So, well,
not that we're going to go and protest. We'd like to go and cover it.
The PPC members or the PPC people who bought tickets know where it is, or the people who bought tickets
know
where it is.
So if any of the ticket holders are listening, give us a buzz when there's some music on, and we'll talk briefly because we have a guest. But anyway, the messaging here is all over the place. I tried to watch the 20-minute video that Paravalos rhymes with...
For all of us.
For all of us. Paravalos?
For all of us.
For all of us.
Yeah.
I'm not mocking your name there. I just wasn't sure of the pronunciation. Now I know. I didn't know we had the revolutionary communist movement in town. Now I do.
Yeah.
I tried to find them. I couldn't find anyone. So if they want to call the break, they can too. But the sort of counter narrative to this was Antifa, Antifa, Antifa. Antifa is a different thing from the revolutionary communist movement.
Yeah.
And I know the tendency is to associate anybody on the left that's got a flag or a couple of flags in the red and black with this. It is a completely different thing. They jumped right on that. And I think that's when they went international, because it was like there's all this back and forth on, oh, Antifa are coming. They're violent thugs and they wear bandanas and this and da da da. And I was like, I never saw Antifa mentioned. It was like the revolutionary communist movement, which I didn't know we had.
The People's Party press release mentioned Antifa. They identified the people who are going to protest.
The communist
Antifa.
Thugs are going to shut them down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a blanket term, and they're using the term Antifa because it's a misunderstood term that's used to identify anyone who's going to go out and protest
with a bandana on. Or no bandana on.
Bandana, no bandana, but I mean, the popular images of basically black bloc people.
So it's... But they're not black bloc people.
They're not black bloc people, but I mean, that's the image.
In the style of.
In that style, but I mean, that's the image they want to propagate when they say Antifa.
So it sounds like there's going to be a protest at City Hall, not canceled, on Friday. Is that, I've got that right?
Yeah, it's more like a demonstration.
A demonstration. Wouldn't that be ironic if this secret location was on Cardin Street somewhere? 90 Cardin. I don't know. But the last time Bernier was in town was at that coffee shop in the condos.
When he was running for the Conservatives, yeah.
To which he came very close to winning after, what, 13 rounds?
Half a percentage point.
Yeah. So it's like, Their problem, though, optical problem, or however you want to put it, and we were just talking about this before coming on there, the breaking news from Winnipeg, mm-hmm. nowhere near here, mm-hmm. that the board of the riding of the People's Party in Winnipeg has resigned mm-hmm. because in their view, and this is People's Party people,
yeah.
in their view, the party is being taken over by racists, anti-Semites, and conspiracy theorists. Now, this isn't anybody lefty, Antifa, Revolutionary Communist Movement, etc. saying this. This is people that are inside the party who are into the whole being against corporate welfare and government intervention, the libertarians, I guess, right, you'd say, and supply management, and all those things we expect of right-wing people. Mm-hmm. So this group have said, and this is People Party people from the prairies, there's a mouthful, have said they don't want anything to do with it. Now, you have to wonder whether, you know, as we said in the earlier bit, we're so close to election time there as to whether this, we're going to see more of this from other People's Party groups. There hasn't, you know, we've seen all this business going on in Guelph. It's yet to, well, tomorrow we'll know, I guess, the final result. But there was something else, too, that I wanted to mention. There was that, like, some of the back and forth online. Here's an example as to why people might be confused as where the People's Party sit. This was a retweet by the People's Party talking about immigration, and I'm quoting a retweet by the People's Party. This isn't me or any lefties. Immigration has completely destroyed Europe. Something drastic needs to be done before we end up like the UK and Sweden. Mm. Now, what would you read into that? Mm-hmm. I'm not misquoting. That is a direct quote from a retweet. Now, I know the People's Party might say, oh, that's coming from somebody else. Why would you retweet it then if, you know, there's going to be any difficulty with what's with being said? Because that phrase right there plays into everything that the RCM and so-called Antifa or lefty protesters are saying. Mm-hmm. That kind of language there is a direct echo of the kind of language that they find objectionable. Now, mind you, was the poster that they posted of the stabbing swastika
right?
Well, it violent?
Looked, that looked like a World War II poster.
That's definitely, I think I've seen that before. Very, very similar. And the bloody skull. Mm-hmm. No violence has transpired yet, and hopefully it won't. Mm-hmm. But where do you think this is going? Like, what are we going to see tomorrow? I don't think we're going to see violence in the streets of Guelph. That's just not our design.
I don't. Yeah,
in this town, left, right, center,
no,
whatever, in front, behind.
I mean, all the times. I mean, this is a different bailiwick altogether. But like all the times Harper came here, Harper would also come to the Guelph Banquet Hall, which is like out on Missioner Road.
Well, it'll be in the boonies. Like, the meeting will be in the boonies. Where transit doesn't go, that's where these meetings take place.
Yeah.
Regardless of the party. If they don't want people to go, it's off the bus route.
Right.
Always.
I mean, the 2011 election was an exception because it was like at the Harper's appearance was at the Delta Hotel Conference Center, which was like, oddly enough, right across the road from the university.
But very restricted in
terms of
who could go.
It was also summer, too, right? So it was a bit different.
Did you get into that eventually, by the way?
I did get into that.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Because you're a proper journalist.
Some people think so.
I do. But you would
My
think,
mom thinks I'm cool.
I was looking for it online where they, I think we talked about this before when Preston Manning got chased out of the downtown by people.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that would have been the end of anybody else. Anybody political setting foot in this town, but it seems they want to keep coming, which is their right.
Right.
Yet it's all this, right?
Well, my thing about this is that, and the reason why I wanted to sort of contextualize this in the thing about free speech is that as soon as the event was canceled, it was like free speech versus free speech. And I have a feeling like nobody like really understands that term who's been talking about this. Because I think on the one side you have people meaning free speech for people who think like me because we're the downtrodden and we're the victims in all this. And by that I mean like sort of from the people side of things, you know, that white men aren't getting the soapbox they deserve. And then you have the anti-Bernier people who are saying like, no, we're exercising our free speech, which is why we don't want to hear from this guy. And it's like, well, we're both advocating for free speech in our own bubbles. We want to be able to talk freely in our bubble and be able to keep up people we don't want to hear from outside our bubble. And that's not kind of what free speech is. I'm with you. I don't think it was going to descend into violence. When you sort of look into the Hamilton examples where it's been like sort of like a steady sort of simmering, like it's been like boiling for months. Like when there was the violence in Gage Park during Hamilton Pride, it was like all of a sudden like they're having this big nice Hamilton Pride event in a park. It was a nice sunny day, and there are these
guy Christian, shows up in a helmet and a vest,
right? There are these Christian protesters there, like, you know, God hates fags, blah blah blah, whatever. And then, you know, people come rolling in identifying as yellow vesters, but they're like camo and flak jackets and things, and automatically accelerate the stuff. And then
by hitting people with the helmet that they took off their head,
right? And then, you know,
and then everybody goes to jail.
Right.
Like a whole bunch of people went to jail.
I'm glad you segued to that, because I want to know what all these free speech people who are coming to Bernie's defense think about someone like Cedar Hopperton, or Hopperton.
Yeah.
Who was put in jail. She wasn't at the Pride festivities and didn't take part in the violence that was at the Pride festivities. She's a trans woman. She got up and talked at a demonstration at Hamilton City Hall a couple of days later and talked about the need for people who identify as LGBTQ+, excuse me, to defend themselves and defend themselves against like a violent system. And she specifically mentioned the police, because it's been the feeling of these communities that the police aren't doing enough to keep them safe.
And took some verbal shots at the police in the room.
Right. And then
it's like, by the way, there's a warrant for this person.
Right.
So there was like a sort of circuitous route for Cedar Hopperton to get arrested.
Right. And then, but I mean, they arrested her on the pretext that she was there taking part in this violence on Pride, which, you know, from all appearances sounds like the people who were there with Pride doing Pride events were the ones defending themselves, but they take her into custody and then have to let her go because, surprise, she wasn't there that day. But, you know, where are all these people who are, like, hopping to Lindsay Shepherd's defense this week? They're not hopping to Cedar Hopperton's defense.
It's selective free speech, right?
Yeah.
It's like you pick what you're, if you're, the speech is on, it seems there's a clear divide.
Yeah.
What side you're on. And there's lots of, there's coding in there too. Like Bernier, is he a fascist? I don't know. Actually, in an interesting bit of crossover, Warren Kinsella wrote an article about, you know, is Maxime Bernier racist? And he's like, well, he's, you know, he finds himself in the orbit of the racist, and there's lots of dog whistling going on. But there's a lot of examples among people who seem to identify as People's Party online tweeting very racist things.
Yeah.
Now, as to whether other people in People's Party disown them is one thing. They really need to sort it out, and they really need to put the kibosh on it if they want to get anywhere, especially when you've got the entire Winnipeg division stepping down.
Yeah, and it's not the first time that an entire PPC
because
board has stepped down.
If you say things like that, then the people on the Antifa, let's call it the Antifa side of the equation without naming all of the groups, are going to protest you because you are saying inflammatory things, you're saying racist things. It's going to happen.
And I want to say it's not just People's Party. I've been taking screenshots of tweets and Facebook posts. And this one was from the Guelph PCs a couple of months ago. It's a link to a Toronto Sun story about David Suzuki. And it says, it's amazing that without his television script, he doesn't have an answer. Where was Soros with that script?
Ooh.
Which is a
blatant, so now you know the PCs are never
anti-Semitic attack. And I have another one here that was retweeted by Greg Chamberlain, who's the president of the Conservative EDA.
Ooh.
And it's this meme from somebody called Canadians versus Trudeau 1K. And it says, dear celebrities, we don't care what you think. Canadians versus Trudeau 1K. I'm going to read his description. Trudeau lied and keeps lying. He hit a globalist agenda to turn Canada into the UN's property. Vote him out October 2019 and handle delivering facts. Voters needed. And it's some kind of emoji. A woman, a dark skinned woman with red hair.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, this isn't a People's Party thing. Just want to point that out.
Yeah. So I think all parties out there, regardless of your politics,
and I want to add,
you really need to watch.
And I want to add, too, that the Conservative candidate is a person of color, Dr. Ashish Sashan. who is a, I believe he's a Pakistani immigrant. So, I mean, I'm not sure if it's intentional, like when you're tweeting these things, or whether you're just like, yeah, this person hates Trudeau and I'm going to retweet it. You got to watch who you're retweeting at that too. So it's
but there is no filter. They're not
They're
not watching what they're retweeting, right?
So no.
We can give that advice to them, but it's going to keep going on because they figure it'll turn to some kind of advantage. Just stop, because if you don't, the protesters are coming, and that is guaranteed. You have our guarantee that that's what's going to happen. And of course, we'll cover it all right here on
Guarantee
Open Sources.
Void in Tennessee. Let's bring Mark McKinnon in. We're going to take a musical break and break for PSAs. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Band you've 100% never heard of. SFH.
He was just holding up a cell phone there. That's what
I don't know what's going on. We played that from YouTube because he's not in the archives. That was Warren, I think he's playing bass. Warren Kinsella's band, SFH, with the song Kind of Sucks. 1,791 views. I guess we're the one. I don't know. But anyway, check them out. I have no idea what record label they're on, or maybe not, but. This is interesting. That guy's got a lot of irons in the fire. Right?
They're just waiting for Tom Hanks to come by and hear them play, and then they'll be on the Ed Sullivan
Superstars.
Show.
Superstars.
That was a reference to That Thing You Do, directed by Tom Hanks.
That's a good movie.
It's enjoyable. We're going to talk about local stuff now with Sports 6 Counselor Mark McKinnon. Mark, welcome back to Open Sources.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
On our very, this very, it's very humid in here.
Gonna thunk the thermostat.
Let's call the rest of the show off. Yeah. No, we're actually glad Mark's here today, and not just because we like his company, but we do have breaking news on a Thursday. This very contentious discussion that we were expecting on Monday about shrinking the size of the library and cutting its budget. There is new financial information, Mark. I admittedly sort of scanned the email before showtime, so maybe you can give us a bit more detail in terms of what the new development is with this.
Sure, the information just came out a couple of hours ago, really. And so, obviously, staff put out the report last Friday, indicating it would be on Monday's agenda for looking at the reducing potentially the size of the library and kind of changing its scope a little bit. The information that recently came back was the architects submitted the cost of it, which is significantly higher, over $14 million higher than council had approved. And so based on that new scope, staff felt that they have to make a more comprehensive look at the entire project options. Obviously, a lot of people still want the library kept the same size. They want to go with the library's plans, even though it doesn't align fully with what the city might want.
Right.
But there's a lot of support for that. So the staff said, well, August is a holiday for council, and a lot of staff takes August holidays as well. So rather than rushing things and trying to do things for Monday, given this new information that literally just came in this week about the total cost, staff wants to take a more comprehensive look and present council with a number of different options about if we want to proceed with the library, here are some options. It could be downsized. Right. It could be changed in some scope. We could introduce a tax levy, or there could be other projects that are scrapped and saying, well, if we want to do the library, we're not going to do A, B, and C as well. And of course, there's also the ever-moving target from the provincial government on funding as well.
Right.
And so they just figured they need a little bit more time, and so we'll take a look at it in the fall.
Right, because the original report, which came out last week, it suggested cut. Because there was already sort of budgetary concerns. So it was 88,000 square feet. It was cut by, I think, 23,000 square feet. Wanted to cut it 23,000 square feet in the staff report. So does the architect's report, is that the 64 thousand square feet, or is that the 88,000 square feet? That's over budget.
So no, it's the larger one. The library hired their own architect to come up with their version rather than working with the architect that we have for the windmill development, the larger project.
Okay.
And the architect development came back in the 90-ish thousand square feet, 80 to 90.
Yeah.
And that number came in exceeding 60,000 or 60 million is what they're saying what the amount was. And so staff was surprised to receive that given that we had a certain number of parameters that we'd set up through council, and this exceeds those parameters. So we have to have a conversation.
Right. And this is to get into, or not to get into, even the fact about the parking garage, the 500 space parking garage, which we've discovered there is, once you get one story under Baker Street, there's a big hunk of bedrock there that's hard to dig through.
Which I'm sure actually isn't a full-on surprise. I know the staff report kind of made it sound more like, oh, we just discovered this.
Yeah.
But that isn't the case. They've known about it. Perhaps we have more, exclude the pun, concrete information about the bedrock and the effect it will have. But in terms of, everyone knows that there's bedrock underneath there. And so looking at putting underground parking in, if that's not feasible, then that might change the 500 spaces. It might change the profile of what we do, might change the number of spaces we do. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, staff is always going to be taking a look now that we passed the acknowledgement of the climate change crisis. Staff is always going to be putting everything through the lens of climate change as directed by council.
Right.
And so does this fully align with what we intend to do downtown? Clearly, we need more parking.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need 500? Is this the right place for it? And that's something that staff has expressed concerns. Again, we'll get a more comprehensive look at that come the fall.
Mm-hmm. Because I believe it's, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but a good portion of the cost to cover the whole project is supposed to come from parking fees.
That is a significant portion. Obviously, there's private development that we'll be having. It's not all public lands, but certainly the parking revenue is a big benefit to the city and help offset some of the costs, whether it's library operations or whatnot, as well as there has to be parking available for, say, condo development that goes on there and other institutional uses, which have not been fully described.
Right.
And so because of that, there is need for some parking. The staff was, the report was not saying we're not going to have any parking there.
Yeah.
But how can we look at parking maybe a little different through both a financial and a climate change lens?
Mm-hmm. I do want to get back to the library for a sec, because I think people felt kind of shell-shocked about when that report sort of fell, that, you know, I think people felt like the city was in a good place in terms of, you know, we were all kind of on the same page. There's really kind of no organized resistance to having a main branch of the library now. So people kind of felt like the rug was pulled out of their out from under their feet on this. So, you know, from your perch as a counselor, was there any rumblings about, you know, maybe a shrinking plan for the library in advance of this, or was there any anticipation?
There was a lot of unknowns. Obviously, it's a bit of a, you know, a target that, because the city was not the one doing the library development, that was the library board and the architects that they hired. And so somewhat there's a bit of a disconnect between the information city staff receives on what's normally a city project, like police station or the South End Community Center, versus something like the new library.
Mm-hmm.
And so having it come out on Friday with such a dramatic shift and a dramatic change, it makes sense why a lot of the community were very caught off guard and were very surprised, and a lot of them were angry.
Mm-hmm.
Why did we do all this community consultation and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on it if we're just going to change the recommendation? But what people have to realize is that the information we have now is not the same as we had 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we did not have a provincial government that greatly changed the funding that we can apply through development charges. We did not have that scenario. And we also didn't know about costing. And how much that's come in. And when we're looking at any project that we have in the city, there can't be anything that's untouchable and unspeakable. People will say, we need a little library, you can't touch it. It's like that's the wrong way to look at it. There's nothing that we can't touch. I'm a massive proponent for the South End Community Center. It's been something I've been pushing since we started. But if this new DC problem comes in and we have a $10 million shortfall, we have to look at some discussions, whether it's a South End Community Center with a library or something else. The staff has identified that over the next 10 years on our capital forecast, we might be short by about $150 million that we can pull from DC's development charges in order to put towards these projects. And this isn't something we can just hand wave away. We could say we're going to increase taxes by $150 million. Right. If we don't have the cash from a development charge and we can't get that from developers, we'll just get it from you, the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. And some people would say, great, raise my taxes, build the library I want. Or raise my taxes, build the community center that I want in the South End. Other people will say, whoa, live within your means. Right. I have to do with my budget at home. I can't, you know, if my budget gets cut, if I get a pay decrease at work, I have to change my plans. And for anything in the city to be considered not touchable, given that we're not dealing with human rights issues, we're not dealing with health issues, this isn't like cutting surgery. Or cutting education. The stuff we
or paramedics.
The stuff we do within the city, most of it is really quite optional. Yes, we need clean drinking water. Yeah. Yes, we have to pick up garbage. But we don't need a particular type of library or community center or park maintenance in a certain level or snow plowing at a certain level. We do provide services. And if I was at a provincial government, I may say healthcare is not touchable. Education is not touchable. But I will never say as a municipal government, this service we provide is not touchable because that's irresponsible. We have to look at everything. And the target moved from 2 years ago. We are no longer in the same environment when we made that initial decision on the library size and scope. This is not the same. And if it's not affordable, we have to have that conversation. Either do we afford it a different way or do we scale back in some way?
You raise an interesting point, though, that, I mean, this is one small aspect of what's going to be a much bigger discussion. And the other big thing that's coming on Monday is the staff report about how budgeting is going to happen this year in terms of how the city is going to respond to all these cuts from the province. Do you think that, I mean, you've been through a few budgets now, but do you think that there's the wiggle room there in the city budget to, you know, address that shortfall? And does that involve cuts to service?
Yeah, it's a great question and something we're obviously all talking about. And we haven't seen the budget, so we don't know for sure. And additionally, it seems almost every week during the spring, we were getting new information about what's happening. What is the provincial government doing to municipalities this week on the funding? Now, province is on a break right now, so maybe the we're not getting quite as many conflicting information. But everything that's coming down has pointing to a significant cost increase on the budget. Like, we've maintained in the 2-3% over the past number of good number of years. I don't think that's feasible this year without service cuts. Yes, we could say we're going to hold it at 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%. We can hold it at whatever value we want. But what are we going to sacrifice to do that? Because if we want to maintain everything that we have with all the downloading, the massive amounts of provincial downloads come to us, whether it's public health with hundreds of thousands of dollars, paramedics, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and DCs and development charges and parkland dedication and all these things that are changing now or could change in the future, this is going to dramatically increase our budget. And the mayor, through working with the Large Urban Mayors Caucus, LUMCO, managed to advocate for the government to stop the changes retroactively for 2019. Because originally, in the spring, they said this year's budget. And we already passed our budgets. And then they said, no, you're getting less money. Yes, it was great that they pushed that off. But come January 1st, 2020, massive number of cuts and changes are coming in. And there is no feasible way we can maintain the same levels of service while maintaining an only a 2-3% tax increase. The two things are mutually exclusive. You cannot do it.
Right.
So what's going to give? We don't know. We haven't seen the budget. Different councillors will have different opinions. Obviously, we have to take affordability in consideration, but we also have to make sure we provide the services people want. And if some things have to get scaled back or delayed or changed because of the affordability pressures, that's a decision that I'm willing to have, and I'm willing to have the discussions. It's something that we deal with at council. This 2020 budget is going to be the most difficult budget that I've experienced since being in here because of the radical shifts we're getting from the provincial downloading.
Peel's already saying that they're going to have to increase taxes more than expected. So, I mean, they're probably in the same boat as you are, that, you know, their budget process doesn't begin until the fall, but they're already sort of I guess, massaging the
right
the mentality of the people who live in Peel that, you know, you're probably going to get a higher than expected tax bill next year.
And it's good that staff is doing this signaling to people so that it's not a surprise. I mean, of course, the budget discussions are always quite long, but I applaud staff for coming to us early with these signals to let us know, hey, that 10-year capital forecast that you had approved last year, and that was fully funded, except for a small amount during a budget cut that we did. But now that that's up in the air, that's at jeopardy, everything has to be re-examined and re-looked at because of these changes that have come down. And getting that signal early should tell the community, this may not be budget system as normal. There'll always be people that say, cut the services, cut the bloat, cut the waste, dump all these services that I don't use because it doesn't affect me. We get a lot of that. They might not say that directly, but that's really what they're telling us. And that's not something we can easily do as council. We have to look at things holistically. We have to look at things with balance. And I'm certainly asked for the task. It'll be a challenge, but it's something that we do as councillors.
Yeah, I don't use Norm Jerry Park. Let's get rid of it.
Yeah.
Or traffic lights.
That swam upstream. That's not using traffic lights. Do you have any ideas? Like, you've pushed for things in the past where everybody has their sort of pet issues, pet causes, what's your thinking? What can we lose?
Yeah, I think we're going to lose some capital is the big thing that we're going to lose because that's where the development charges have hit the most. And so this park upgrade, well, it's going to get pushed back a year or two now. Mm. This new idea that we had on this service change is going to get pushed back a bit. And taxes are probably going to go up higher than expected. I mean, I obviously don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell what council is going to decide. But if it was coming through at the highest tax increase in the past five years, it wouldn't surprise me given that the unique changes are coming along here. So we, in addition to just maintaining what we have, there's a number of council initiatives that people want to see. We want to see improved transit. We got to put some more money to that. The state of the paramedic facilities. We took a tour of council. We took a tour of that during this spring, summer. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible. We have to put some capital improvements into that. We know that there are the ward boundary and composition service review for council that is undertaking. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars towards that. So there's a number of changes that we're going to have to look at. And of course, I want the initiatives I've been pushing for affordable bus passes to be even better. Lower.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that we take care of the people on the society that have the least options. And we have to make sure we take care of that too. And there's so many competing pressures. What's going to give? I don't know. And are we going to cut this particular service, something that people expect, whether it's a waste management issue, a parks issue, a maintenance of streets issue? I don't know. But I have a feeling that capital is not the easiest to cut because it's certainly something really big, but it's something that we can, if we push back a new park redevelopment by a year or two or three, it's not as impactful as dropping waste collection to once every 2 weeks, as an example.
Are you ready to push back the South End Community Center?
You know, I would love to say absolutely not. The reality is that's not how I operate. Nothing is sacred. That said, I think it can be done. I think I'm willing to debenture more. If we're short by $10 million, then we need to borrow $10 million more to get this done. It's something, a lot of people compare the South End Community Center to the library, of course, competing priorities, and I get that. But I put this forward. There's people right now in the city of Guelph, if you said, can you get access to all the recreation facilities that you need? They'll say, no, I can't book out time because it's booked. I can't get into those swimming lessons because it's booked.
Yeah.
There are facilities that are booked right now, and we need additional recreation facilities for that. I've never heard anyone say, there's a lineup at the library and I can't get in. I can't borrow the book that I want.
Right.
I'm not saying that the library facilities are ideal the way they are, but there's no one that's going without the service that the library provides because it's too small. But there are people that go without the recreation facilities that we need because we do not have adequate space. And that's a really important, which why the South End Community Center, to me, absolutely takes priority from a social point of view above the library. Economic development, that's a bit different thing. Baker project is obviously a very different beast than what's just the South End Community Center. And that role that it plays is more important to me than the service that the library provides. Mm-hmm. Because right now, everyone can still take out a book. Everyone can still get the facilities they need. Mm. You might be on a wait list for an extra couple of weeks to get that newest Stephen King novel, for example, because we're not buying enough copies of that.
Right.
But no one is going without because of the current library status.
Right. I'd say some of the lines for some of the holds on the new release DVDs are pretty long, but I'll digress.
Fix it. No.
Fix it. I wanted to talk about your feelings about how things have been going on council, because, you know, we're kind of teeing up for, you said it's going to be the most difficult budget ever, and budget times are always difficult. I mean, it's been, the last couple have been fairly smooth sailing, but I mean, this, I think we're going to be testing the relationship on council in a way that we probably haven't felt it. I mean, sometimes it, there are little outbursts of friction, but I mean, can this council, like, be ready to, like, to work collaboratively under pressure like this, do you think?
Yeah, there's obviously always going to be personality conflicts. I guess the advantage, perhaps, is the familiarity. Obviously, Councillor O'Rourke and Gawler are the two new faces. The other 11 of us have all, we've all worked with each other for the previous 4 years. So we do kind of know each other, and we know our touch points and our push buttons. I do think people may be getting a little more entrenched in their ideologies than they were in the previous 4 years. So in the previous term of council, in the first couple of years, there was a lot of jockeying for position and trying to understand who we are. The last couple of budgets have been not so bad, a little bit easier to get along, partially because it was kind of rosy and things are going well. So now we have a stressor of a new, very difficult budget that's going to be this year. And I think that will put the personality conflicts to the test. And how are we going to be able to collaborate, work together when I think ideology is being more entrenched in what we're doing? I think social media is making everyone maybe a little bit more grumpier or polarized, perhaps. I mean, I've certainly noticed even with my own information that I was like, whoa, I really shouldn't have tweeted that. That was not very nice. Maybe I need to scale things back as well. So if we're getting more polarized and we're going to be under stress, it might be difficult. I'm hoping that at the same time, to combat that, A, we got two new faces, which, you know, changes the dynamic, but also we know each other a little bit more. And the stuff we do with in not social situations like going out to a beer with Councillor Hoffman or anything like that, but in a social situation that's outside the council chamber. So these are going to our conferences that we go to, and we get outside of council FaceTime, or whenever we go on tours that the staff arrange to go look at the different facilities. These are a great opportunity to interact with staff as well as council outside of the council chambers, and it humanizes us. And I think that's a good thing. If I can look at person X across the horseshoe and see them more as a person and less as a political comrade, or unfortunately sometimes opponents if we're on different sides. I think if we can view each other as just people in Guelph trying to do the best job we can, I think that that's really good. And we have noticed I've definitely noticed an uptick in that type of non-council social dynamic outside the horseshoe. And that has been really good. And I'm hoping we can continue with that. At the same time, you know, fuses can be short when it comes to a strong ideological split on something, as we saw during, for example, the climate change issue, where that brought out a lot of real fractious information. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen as much on the budget time, but I'm not that optimistic either.
We are running out of time, speaking of time, but we've talked about a lot about the budget, but, you know, we're heading into a break, but I mean, we'll be right back at it in the fall. What are you sort of looking forward to in the next couple of months that's on your radar?
Yeah, certainly with the budget coming up, the South End Community Center and how that's going to be developing, I think that's really important for me to see. And additionally, we're looking at I'm the chair of corporate services, and we're going to be re-examining how we do our budgeting in terms of multi-year budgeting, looking at the infrastructure levy and how we're going to perhaps be repositioning that as integrating within the base budget and having a better hold than what we're doing, but maybe removing some of the terminology and changing some of the structure around something that might be a little fractious about that. So budget to me is always, it's the most wonderful time of the year, budget time. I love it. It's my favorite time. I love talking about the numbers and looking at the details and the policies that go along with that. So I'm certainly looking forward to doing that as we come into the fall. But certainly in August, we got some of the big conferences going on, the AMO conference in Ottawa that several of us are going to. And there's always a great time to get FaceTime with ministers and whatnot. So it'll be a good month off. I hope all the staff enjoys the time for the ones that have their holidays in August. And then we'll come back refreshed in September.
Final question, where can people find you or how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. Well, on Tinder, I'm no. no. So I'm at
swipe up.
Yeah, yeah. I'm at Ward 6 Guelph.ca. You can reach me on all the socials, Mark Ward 6 Mark. So there's Twitter or Facebook or whatnot. So I'm fairly easy to reach. Always better to send an email to me, mark.mckinnon, that's M-A-C McKinnon, at guelph.ca is a great way to reach out if you need me.
Well, we appreciate you stopping by as always. Thank you, Mark McKinnon. We will have to call the show there, unfortunately. We hope you liked it. As always, you can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or check us out on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to our show again, you can download it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through your podcast app on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to New Eye News and Politics site at GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com, and there might be a thing.
Oh, don't tease the people like that.
Yes.
They're always waiting for a thing. Anyway.
Not always, no. Yes, always, right.
We have a repeat of Sounds Good to Me at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we will see you then.